Back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive Now. Not just podcasting and video casting and Christmas casting, but also transcribing, courtesy of our friends at Otter, out on the website. So if it looks funny or sounds funny, it's probably because I'm from Dundalk and I speak funny. We were in Dundalk last week doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour at Costas Inn. I want to remind everybody, get your crab cake orders in early this week if you are shipping tasty crab cakes from any of our great sponsors out and about. We had Gina Shock. She shipped herself in. She ate my crab cake the other night. I still never got a crab cake. I did have some delicious oyster stew as well as a Greek salad, but I gotta get back down to Costas, get some Crab Imperial this week. Maryland Crab Cake Tour on hiatus through the holidays, but just a phenomenal, phenomenal effort at the end at Costas with Gina Shock and John Allen and the Beyond Words folks and the Milkshake folks and my dear friend Joyce Bucci, as well as at Fadley's the prior week with Damie. Also, Ross Lane joined us as well from the Maryland Lottery with Scratch Offs, and Dan Rodericks did two really chunky pieces on why we love Baltimore that you can find out at BaltimorePositive.com. One of the things we love about Baltimore is football and crab cakes, and nobody does it better than we do. Luke Jones is here. It's Christmas week. Christmas Eve, if you are shipping those crab cakes from Fadley's or Costas or Conrad's or Pappas or any of our great sponsors out to the world. A lot of folks get crab cakes on Christmas Eve, Luke. Are these going to be happy crab cakes? Are they going to be like that dry ham from 77 after it goes to the post? I'm asking.
I think it'll be a happy Christmas Eve, but I think it depends on your definition of happy. I think it'll be a win. I think you still like where the Ravens are from a run game standpoint, from a defensive standpoint. It wasn't a perfect defensive performance in Cleveland, but, I mean, they gave up 13 points. Are we really going to sit here and Justin Houston shouldn't pull on Deshaun Watson's face mask? Noted. Okay, the Browns ran the ball on the Ravens better than anyone had since the Browns played them back in Week 7, but it's not as though they gashed them. It was, hey, they got a lead because the Ravens defense couldn't be perfect and the Ravens offense couldn't get out of its own way. And then the Browns just kind of leaned into their running game, and Nick Chubb, newsflash, is pretty good. So if you give them a lead and they have a chance to run the ball and kind of control the clock in that way, then they were able to do it. So, there's not a whole lot to say about the defense from Saturday's game that doesn't pertain to the health of Marcus Peters and the health of Calais Campbell, really. I think for me, and I put this up on Twitter, and I got some obtuse replies to it, but we saw Kyle Hamilton being targeted a lot early in that football game. And I made mention that as good as this Ravens defense can be, and this is a good defense, I'm not ready to say it's a great defense. I haven't seen greatness out of this group consistently. I think they have great players, but as a collective unit, I'm not ready to put this in any kind of a peak Ray Lewis, Ed Reed kind of unit as it pertains to the history of the Baltimore Ravens. But it's a good defense. I'm very clear about that. But I think one thing that we saw early in the game, and then it's magnified when Marcus Peters leaves the game, not necessarily that the Browns started throwing the ball all over them, but from a big picture sense, is this team's had two corners that it trusts. And a lot of people were like, well, they only have one, Marcus Peters. I'm talking about how the Ravens feel about this. They've had two corners that they play, Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters, despite the fact that they're in dime and sub package way more than you're in a quote base defense in this day and age. They've used Kyle Hamilton as their big nickel. Now, Kyle Hamilton in certain matchups has thrived in that role. In other matchups where it might be a little trickier going up against a slot receiver or a little more of a talented tight end, we've seen him have a few more issues there. My point is, it's really difficult to continue to play really good defense when you have so little depth at corner. And then that's magnified when Marcus Peters leaves the game with a calf injury. And hey, we all saw the clip of him limping noticeably on the sideline, and obviously he didn't return. So, calf injuries are tricky, especially for a defensive back. You hope there's a positive update this week. You hope he's at least ready for, let's say, week 18. If he can be ready for Cincinnati, if he has to miss some time here, you hope it's only a couple weeks. But that is not good news, because let's face it, we've seen Brandon Stevens and we've seen the rookie corners, and I mean it hasn't gone well when they've had any other corners on the field other than Marlon Humphrey. And I get it, Marcus Peters hasn't had a phenomenal all-pro season, but he's still better than what's behind him on the depth chart. So not having him, and then what it potentially means for the Ravens run defense wise with Calais Campbell. Not that I expect their run defense to go in the tank. They have lots of good players, but Calais Campbell, we've talked about it over and over, despite the fact that he's 36 years old and a dinosaur in terms of deep NFL player terms, he's had a really good season. So seeing him with the knee, you know, I know he was wearing a brace after the game in the post game locker room. Again, fingers crossed on that. You know, I saw some speculation that, you know, it's a MCL, which, you know, usually that's not a terribly long timetable as far as a return, but certainly you don't want Calais Campbell to be playing at less than 100%. So, I mean, again, they gave up 13 points. There's not a whole lot to say about it. They gave up one long touchdown drive. And again, the Justin Houston face mask was just so such a backbreaking development there. I mean, they would have gotten them off the field and probably had good field position at that point. But Cleveland put together a drive. Deshaun Watson wasn't great. You know, he was better than he had been the previous 2 weeks, but you know, still not pushing the ball down the field a whole lot. And like I said, the Browns running game was effective, which no running game had been effective against this Ravens defense in quite a while. So sure, if you want to dock them, you know, knock them down a peg or two because of that, have at it. But let's face it, what plagues this football team, we're not talking about the defense very much, although, like I said, still not ready to call it a great defense. You know, considering some of the performances we've seen over these last several weeks haven't exactly come against flashy, top five kind of caliber offenses, if we're being honest.
You know, I guess it's the time of year when you start beating up DaCosta about the bad things and probably not cheering enough about the good things in Roquan Smith. And you and I alluded to this earlier, where this franchise will be at the end of this for injured players, older players, rent a player. They have a few of those, right? And where the step up is for any number of the next level of whatever Tyus Bowser became, let alone Matt Judon or Za'Darius Smith or whatever, but these second, third, fourth year guys where you say, where are we with Devin Duvernay? Where are we with Brandon Stevens? Where are we with Ben Cleveland? Where are we with, just go through the list of these guys. The defensive line has been the one place that maybe they could play a week or two or three without Calais Campbell. Maybe he makes his triumphant return in Nashville on January the 14th and is perfectly fine and awesome. And same thing with Peters, right? Like if they beat Atlanta this week and a couple things happen, they make the playoffs. We've talked about these scenarios, right? And if that happens and you're just content to say, let's rest everybody and go on the road with healthy everybody on January 14th and treat Pittsburgh and Cincinnati like what they are, meaningless games at that point, if you're just going to be a wild card team and you can't win the division, right? Or you feel like you can't win the division, whatever it would be. But to me, the defensive line's the one place where, like, they have a little bit of depth. The backside, I don't think so. You know what I mean? And especially unless you're getting a snowy night in Buffalo or a snowy night. And I still think about all of this, right? Like, I mean,
sure,
Patrick Mahomes wakes up with the flu on, like Billy Joel did the other day, right? Like, it happens, right? But I would just say, on the Vegas side of who you like better and where you'd like to be, you wrote passionately last week about the health of Lamar Jackson and that being important on January the 14th. Dude, if they beat the Falcons this week and they backdoor themselves in and Christmas morning they are a playoff team, man, I would back everything down on all of this and try to go win in Nashville and level it, because that's what's going to happen, right? Try to be the 5 seed, right? I mean, that, like, that's their scenario with it. That's their Christmas scenario to winning in January is not going out and having Lamar gimp around on Saturday. That's my opinion this week on that.
Well, and again, it depends where he is. I mean, I hear what you're saying. They're not going to shut it down, though. That if they win out, they win the division. I mean, they do.
Right.
Now, you and I can sit here and say that they're probably not going to beat the Bengals, and we'd pick Cincinnati if we're picking the game come week 18, but they're not going to say that. They're not going to think. I mean, even if Eric DaCosta and Steve Bisciotti and John Harbaugh deep down know that this team, as it's presently constructed, is ill-equipped to make a deep January into February Super Bowl run. They're certainly not going to throw in the towel or anything like that and shut it down and just say, be resigned to the fact that they're going to be a wild card. So that's where you do look at this thing right now. Where's Lamar this week? Assuming he gets out on the practice field, and we'll find out very shortly, you know, what that looks like, and, you know, whether he's full, limited, whatever, whether he's even out there. Again, until we actually see him, you just know it's conjecture. And John Harbaugh is going to say every single week he has a chance, right? So until you see that, that's when it's difficult to evaluate. If he's healthy and the rehab's gone great the last couple of weeks and he's good to go and their medical team says he doesn't have any elevated risk of further injury than any other guy that comes back from an injury and just, you know, hey, it's football. You're going to get hurt from time to time. If that's the scenario, then he plays and, you know, you try to see what this thing looks like. I think what's tough, you know, what you mentioned in terms of trying to recalibrate, so to speak, even if you're going to go on the road and, you know, if the playoffs started today, he'd be playing a very wounded, albeit looking like, dare I say, maybe circling the drain Tennessee Titans kind of team right now, when you consider what's happened with them with the losing streak and firing their GM. And I mean, Tannehill gets hurt on Sunday, even though he returned to the game, you know, what's he going to look like and all of that. But I mean, this is a team that they got to try to get themselves in a little bit of a role here. I mean, we've talked about it. This passing game is, as it's been playing for a while now, it's not good enough. And that's where you're trying to manage the micro of winning that week's game, but also trying to get better in some ways that you need to get better. And not to say, I'm not going to be so disrespectful or you know, even to take this game too lightly as far as the Falcons. The Ravens haven't blown anyone out in quite some time. We know that. But at the same time, you don't want to just say, okay, well, you clinch and then, you know, any scenario where they'd shut it down, they're not in any kind of a position, you know, for that, you know. So it really is a case of you need to be healthy. There's no question about that. And if Calais Campbell has to miss a couple games, he has to miss a couple games. If Marcus Peters has to miss a couple games, he has to miss a couple games. If it's longer than that, then yeah, that's more of a problem, of course.
When I say shut it down, by the way, I mean, I fully understand what you're saying.
Right,
I'm saying
right.
The goal now should be to make the playoffs and play with healthy Lamar. That was the you wrote about that last week. And
right.
I, you know, healthy everybody, quite frankly. And I don't even know what that means for Kenyon Drake's availability or where Gus Edwards, who hasn't looked the same, right? We know where Dobbins is in regard to his health. We know where Mark Andrews, we'd like for him to be and what we believe and what he's saying and what our eyes are telling us. I think the wear and tear is as big an issue on them and what this road grader of Pittsburgh and Cincinnati is going to look like out in the cold and Atlanta this week in the cold, what all this is going to look like for them and how that, because these other teams look a little more spry. Sure. I've watched everybody play this weekend and I'm like, Bengals look like it's week six and they're ready for a cat fight.
Yeah.
You know,
although I would say, I mean, Trey Hendrickson's missed time. You know, Hubbard left the game on Sunday. I mean, the Bengals, you know, they've had some guys banged up here and there. You know, I mean, they're arguably their best defensive player, DJ Reader, their nose tackle. Ravens didn't see him back in week five. I mean, he's back now. So
they also got their ass kicked for a half too by Tampa. So let's put that out there too.
Sure. I mean, as well as they played in the second half and as terrible as the Buccaneers were in the second half, that first half was a different story. I mean, my high school buddies who are all Ravens fans, you know, a few of them were even texting, hey, if Cincinnati loses today, this eases the sting of what happened on Saturday. Well, then from that moment on, Cincinnati played better and the Bucs fell apart. So, but your point, I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying. And again, if Lamar comes back, whether it's this week, week after that, following week, and he's not right, and he's playing at less than 100%. I mean, we'll watch the games. We'll see how it plays out, but they're clearly no chance of doing anything special at that point if he's not right physically. If he's right, and if he looks close to 100% or as close as you can be this late in the season, to your point, everyone's banged up. I mean, even Cincinnati, as you said, looks spry. They have guys that are banged up. I mean, it's the nature of the National Football League in mid-December as you're getting closer and closer to January. It's why we talk about the teams that are the healthiest having the best chance to make a run. Cincinnati stayed very healthy last year. The Rams stayed extremely healthy last year. The Rams have been the opposite of that this year, and we see how terrible they've been. I mean, they have Baker Mayfield playing quarterback for them at this point. That's just where they are. If you're the Ravens, if you get Lamar back healthy, got to take care of business these next couple weeks. There's no question about that. And let's face it, they're playing at home. They're playing teams that are worse than them. Now, how much worse? Again, that's up for debate. And we've talked about the struggles of the offense and what that's meant in some of these games that have been closer than people would have expected a month or two ago. It all starts with getting Lamar back, and you hope Marcus Peters and Calais Campbell aren't going to be out too long here. Hope for the best. We'll try to see if we get any kind of a semblance of an update from John Harbaugh this week in terms of what that will mean. But it's a week to week. It's always a week to week thing, but you get to this point in the season, it truly is week to week where win and you're looking for two of those other AFC East teams, non-Buffalo AFC East teams to lose. And if you do that, hey, it's a Merry Christmas on Sunday when you wake up and you've clinched a playoff spot. And then you're in a position where regardless of what Cincinnati does, you beat Pittsburgh, you've got an AFC North championship game in week 18, which I would assume will be flexed to primetime if it plays out that way. So there's still a lot to play for. As lousy as it's felt, as lousy as Saturday was, I mean, that was as lousy as a Ravens game has felt in quite some time.
That Panthers game, they played some stinky games.
Oh, sure.
Felt like they were going to win because Lamar was on the field, and you're like, at some point he'll do something special and they'll win, and they did. They won a lot of ugly games, and they won a lot of games where on Monday were like no style points. There was this wrong and there was that wrong. Well, okay. The thing that's wrong right now with the Ravens is the Bills are really good. The Bengals are really good. The Chiefs are really, that's really what's wrong with the Ravens to me right now, in that I never thought they were that great. 9-5 is, pretty gaudy for what they are. I don't know whether that's going to end at 9-8 or whether that's going to end at 11-5. I don't know where this is going to end, but I know what team they are. And I know what they're capable of doing and what they've looked impotent at doing for 15 weeks now, right? Like literally we're into this. They are what they are, but a diminished version of that with Calais Campbell and with Peters, probably not so great this week. The fact you think they're going to roll the ball out on Christmas Eve and it's going to be sleepy and they're going to beat this rookie quarterback and they're going to stop this running back who's been pretty decent and the offensive line that's been pretty decent at moving the ball. I don't know, but I when I look at the bigger picture for them, I just don't think they have enough talent, man. You know what I mean? Even with Roquan Smith, and I think they made their defense measurably better over the last 5 or 6 weeks, and I think the outcome is there for that, right? But style points, we don't need any style points. I just don't think they're going to be able to beat good teams, to your point, without being able to throw the football. Unless the weather conditions, the right storm blows in and it becomes about Justin Tucker. I don't know how that could happen, but or it just becomes about just running the ball where the forward pass is outlawed. They get into a Canton Bulldogs game here, right?
Exactly. And we've said it over and over again. We'll continue to say it because this discussion's not going anywhere. Even if the Ravens win the Super Bowl, we're still going to be talking about this to some degree or another, as far as what it looks like moving forward, in that unlikely scenario. But I mean, they run the ball very well. They need to lean into that more, especially in situations like what we saw on Saturday, which again was just, I go back to that 11 minutes to go, three timeouts, you're down 10 and you threw six straight passes and turned the ball over on downs. I mean, that was, I saw some people say it on Twitter and I would agree. I mean, that was, if you want to point to a fireable offense, something that you will look to and just say that's below the bar from a coaching standpoint. I mean, there you go. And I've tried to, I feel I've, I haven't been a bash Greg Roman guy. I've questioned their overall philosophy, which goes so far beyond Greg Roman. That's a Bisciotti thing. That's an Eric DaCosta thing. That's a John Harbaugh thing. This is the brass. They signed up for this. Let's face it. They signed up for this.
They drafted Lamar and said that we're going to zag. That's exactly what they did, right?
But it, for me, it's not even that. Drafting Lamar was brilliant. Hey, it's worked out beautifully, but it's been a lot of the personnel decisions since then. And saying, hey, well, we're gonna build a team banking on one wide receiver, staying healthy and popping.
Well, they can't get wide receivers to sign up. Dude, they drafted this kid from Florida that was bunkies with their quarterback, and he hated the offense, right? Because it's
Well,
me, 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 me. This is not a me, me offense if you're a wide receiver. You're going to get Willie Snead. You're going to get 100-year-old DeShaun Jackson who just wants back in the league. DeShaun
yeah,
Jackson would have never wanted a part of this offense when he had legs. Like, literally, he didn't get the
sure.
ball enough. They
Well,
don't throw
but
the
that.
ball enough to anybody enough to make anybody that goes and gets the ball not named tight and end happy with the football.
Well, then they have to look at their philosophy because this is where we look at this thing, starting with 2019. I'm not talking the end of 18. You know, that was Lamar as a rookie, Flacco was hurt, Marty Morningwig was a coordinator. I think as that offense went, it was clear that specific whatever that 7-game run was had a shelf life to it. It's promoting Greg Roman, doing what they've done, seeing an extraordinary 2019 offense, you know, which set records and best point differential in the NFL since the 2007 Patriots, 14-2, all that. And you know, they got shocked in the divisional round. The problem is not that you expected them to be that extraordinary every single year, but I think lots of people were thinking, okay, they're probably not going to continue to run the ball at this extraordinary level of efficiency. Lamar, as he gets older, it won't be quite as fast, you know, and not even talking about the injury scenario, just the scenario of as you get older, you're not quite as fast. So it was always, to me, there was always an expectation that this thing needed to continue to evolve. And the passing game, not that you're going to necessarily throw it a ton. Again, very few people said anything like that. And I feel like that's a disingenuous argument that people try to make to defend the Ravens and say, well, they're not built to throw 45 times. That's not what we're saying here. We're saying that the passing game needs to continue to be really efficient and good. And how do you do that? Well, probably means you need better receivers and better, you know, a bigger commitment to it. But that's not the way they've gone. You know, it's they drafted Marquise Brown, great. Then 2 years later, they drafted Rashad Bateman, and you're thinking, wow, they've got two first round wide receivers, but then they trade the first one, and then they didn't replace him. So, you know, you just kind of look at the thing, and to your point, you know, there's not enough talent from a pass catching standpoint. You know, they drafted Isaiah Likely, and you know, hey, he's shown some nice flashes, but he was a fourth round pick, and you know, it's not as though this has turned into Mark Andrews part two. You know, they've got one standout pass catching target on this roster, and he's a tight end. Beyond that, who is anyone, any defense worth its salt, who are they worried about other than Mark Andrews in terms of pass catching targets? No one. I mean, it's just the truth.
And
So,
Lamar can't throw it to himself.
well, right, exactly. But still, this comes back to the philosophy and say, okay, well, you know, because some people have said, well, Lamar doesn't like throwing you know, he likes throwing to tight ends more, or Greg Roman's not going to use the. Well, then you need to reevaluate the entire thing because I don't see something that's continuing to progress and grow. I see something that at best is stagnant and at worst is moving in the wrong direction. You know, John Harbaugh likes to say this a lot. You know, he attributes it to Bo Schembechler. I'm sure other people have said it because I've heard it in a variety of forums. But you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're not staying the same. Well, it feels like this Ravens offense certainly isn't getting better. Maybe it's staying the same at best, you know, because they still do run the ball very well, or they have the last few weeks since getting Dobbins and Edwards back. But otherwise, feels like it's moving in the wrong direction. And boy, that's a unsettling proposition when you're talking about a pending free agent franchise quarterback who you've got to figure out, you know, whether it's a long-term deal, whether it's tag him for another year. You know, where is he in this thing? How's he feeling about Greg Roman? I mean,
Or whether his value and your value align. I
sure.
mean, I think we're starting to get to that point where they're like, maybe you're not a 50 million. I mean, we can't win with you as it is. How are we going to give you $50 million and find players to put around you that can make this work?
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, and the
I
money
hear
they
you.
have out to Stanley, the money they have out to Humphrey, the notion of Roquan, you know, just like all of this, right? I mean, they paid Andrews, right? Paid Andrews to be more productive than he's been, quite frankly, right? Or it's certainly not in this offense. Man, you know, it's these they're gonna get carved up by you and me in the offseason if this ends 10-7 and a bad beat in the first round of the playoffs. Like literally, right? Like this. And I'm telling you what, if I'm if I'm starting to write it number two pencil right now or get an outline together, I can tell you it's, you know, call me January 15th and tell me where we are, and I'm going to tell you probably not still playing football.
Yeah, well, and that's where you look at this thing, and, you know, I don't know how you don't make a change. And I think it, whether it's all his fault or not, and I don't think it is, because I think you knew what he was. I think it starts with Greg Roman. And I think you have to find out. I was talking about this with Dennis Kolatsis last week. You have to find out before you are willing and at a point where you're going to commit lucrative long-term contract extension to Lamar Jackson. I need to see a coordinator to see what this can look like. And I need to see a more legitimate wide receiver core at this point. I do. That doesn't mean you have to go out and get the best wide receiver in the NFL, but because I'm not saying that that's simple to do, but you've got to have more there because you have to find out. Because if this is truly all it is, and the Ravens might privately tell you that this is what they feel is best for Lamar, if that's truly all it is and you're seeing what this is becoming, then it's not gonna be good enough. It's just not.
I don't want to interrupt you, but just let me jump in on this because we're going long form here today. Coach Trotz and I got together a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about in his, you know, his position to get a gig, another gig in the NHL. He wants to go someplace where he can win. And in defining that, right, you in baseball, you would say there are places where there's no money, right? You can't win there, or it's going to be really hard. The NBA, obviously, the Wizards are under fire. Again, like, you can't win there without this or that. In the NFL, you know, where Shanahan takes pudding and makes it soup, and, you know what I mean, on a third-string quarterback, and they have enough at other talent positions, and it's the system, and, like, all of that. And in this league where everybody has the same amount of money, same amount of draft picks and all that, one thing that's really interesting is I remember going back to when Green Bay recruited Reggie White, right? They couldn't get black players. They couldn't get players. They couldn't get any players in Green Bay. The weather, like all of that. We can't get them to play there. And some of that may be true for Florida kids playing in colder conditions. We put a dome up in Minnesota and in Detroit to keep them toasty and, like, and for the fans as well. I would say the recruitment part of the NFL, I don't think maybe the Bengals for a long time would have trouble getting players because their ownership was cheap, or maybe you don't want to play in a certain place like Cleveland if Hugh Jackson's there and you're 1-15, if you're a bad franchise. But as a recruitment tool in the NFL, there are very few places players won't go and play for the most amount of money, right? Like, for the most part, taxes aside, for Lamar, maybe in Tampa or in a Florida situation, there's a financial thing. But I would tell you that in this or any other offseason, and this is the unspoken thing, they're never going to get a wide. I'm having an offseason conversation. I haven't said this in 4 months, right? We talk about this in the offseason. But you act like Lamar's just going to bring wide receivers in because he's boys. Dude, his boy rolled out, wanted out, like, got out. God bless him in Arizona, whatever he's getting out there, and now they're quarterback, like, the whole deal. But this is like, and I bring this back to Coach Trotz because I am full circle on these conversations, even though sometimes it sounds like I'm meandering. Coach Trotz, they would have loved to have had him in Winnipeg. Right? I mean, he's from that part of the world. They have enough talent. It would have been an unbelievable thing. It'd give him a lot of money, which he's already gotten once, right? How's he recruiting in Winnipeg? Canadian dollar, right, is a problem. I mean, there's a lot of problems, right? How's Greg Roman and Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh, George Kikina, how are they going recruiting a wide receiver? I mean, I'm going back 5 years to Antonio Brown, Dez Bryant, Odell Beckham. And we're just going through all these really talented 100, 120 reception a year. Give me the ball. 14 catches for 138 yards and 2 touchdowns every week. They're my fantasy player before we could really gamble and get the juice on the juice right now, right? I mean, I look at this and think this is a recruitment issue, you know, in the same way that it sounds lovely for Barry Trotz to go to Winnipeg for everybody, except Barry Trotz in the offseason when he's trying to get the star forward and just You might as well be recruiting at Towson for kids that are going to go to Duke. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not. And that's what this has smelled to me like for 5 years. No one has said it. They have to draft their guy until they draft their guy. And the kid comes in and says, my name's Hollywood, dog. My name's not Pasadena. I'm not Inglewood. I'm Hollywood. Give me the ball. And if you don't give me the ball, I'm going to leave. And I mean, I like my boy and all, but I need the ball. And that's the league, man. Am I wrong?
Do you think Stephon Diggs was thrilled when he got traded to the Buffalo Bills? Josh Allen, 2 years into his career, much of what people have said about Lamar Jackson, forget about that. Josh Allen was regarded in a way lower, there was way lower regard for Josh Allen 2 years into his NFL career compared to Lamar. And everything you're just saying, look, you saying what you just said to me sounds like you're saying that this is more of a Lamar thing than a Greg Roman thing. So here's where I come back to, okay, Lamar doesn't want to sign. Are you going to keep Greg Roman as your offensive coordinator if Lamar Jackson requests a trade and goes elsewhere? No, you're not going to, right? Why would you? Is there another Lamar Jackson coming along in the draft that you're going to get? So the point is, if you're going to move on anyway, if that's your thinking, why wouldn't you try another offensive coordinator before you're even going to see this thing? I hear what you're saying about the recruiting thing. First of all, who have the Ravens shown that they're willing to pay as a wide receiver? At some point in time,
well, they're
going
to have to do less once they give Lamar $50 million, right?
Well, but they, I mean, it just, this is a philosophy thing here. Like, you know, this isn't, I really feel at some point in time, like, what you're just saying is like you're just resigned to the fact that they can't get better wide receivers, and I think that's bull.
Resigned to that. I'm being honest in my assessment of when you are a free agent,
okay,
a top 10 free agent wide receiver in any offseason.
So fire Greg Roman then. Are you really going to pick? Are you really going to choose Greg Roman and the coaching staff over Lamar Jackson?
No, you want Lamar to throw the ball 42 times so that Antonio Brown can get his 14 catches.
It's such a disingenuous argument to come back and say, oh, you do want Lamar to throw 42 times. No, I want a better passing game, period. Period. This was the highest efficiency rate passing game in the NFL 3 years ago. Okay, if they can't do it again, fine. But my goodness, you're not going to try a new offensive coordinator? You're not going to try to bring in some fresh blood? You're not going to try to upgrade at wide receiver and see what that looks like? Or are we just going to say, well, this is all it is? Well, then, okay, fine.
I think upgrading at wide receiver means drafting somebody. I mean, okay. And I think they will reside. That's not me saying it. And I think even going into the offseason thinking they're going to give $18 million to a wide receiver, that the kid that signed with the Raiders that went back to play with Carr, right? Like that he was that kind of player would want to be in this system. And you're saying that that's Roman's fault. I'm saying it's not Lamar's fault. It's what this is. This is, okay. Hey, a left tackle, draft the center, have a tight end, have the quarterback shimmy, move, RPO, have a fat back for the second half, have a go the distance back for the first half, like have a Ray Rice. This kid looks so much like Ray Rice. He's wearing his number. Every time he gets the ball, he kind of explodes before this injury in that way. Like, I see all of that, and you think somehow there's an Anquan Boldin, or that kind of receiver that might only want the ball 8 times a game and be more muscly. I don't know, Calvin Johnson. I'm making this up, dude. I don't even that DeAndre Hopkins. None of these guys in this offense would get the ball enough for their tastes. I just don't believe that.
Great. So they have the worst group of wide receivers in the NFL currently. It's either that or you have to have the worst. There's plenty of middle ground here. And for them to be fielding the group of wide receivers that they're fielding right now is an indictment on the organization. It is.
I agree with that. Okay.
It is. So, and I just keep coming back to, this is a philosophy. At the end of the day, this isn't a Greg Roman thing as much as it's a philosophy thing. You know what? We know what Greg Roman was before the Ravens even hired him, and it looked great. But at some point in time, and I'm certainly not kicking out Lamar Jackson to keep Greg Roman. I mean, I don't think anyone would suggest anything like that. But if I'm at a point now where I'm at the crossroads with Lamar that he's going to become more expensive now, I still need to see what this thing looks like. I mean, teams don't just get rid of their franchise quarterbacks when they have to extend them. Now, some probably would have been better off doing that than extending their quarterback. But before
By the way,
I'm
if
going
they
to
do that, if they throw Lamar over the side of the boat for whatever their real reason would be, it'd be very easy to say we didn't like the system anymore, and we thought the system was gay. I mean, they would front face that and say we don't like a $50 million version of Lamar and more $1 million third round wide receivers. And like, I mean, at some point you and me are going to take pencil to paper and the salary cap at the end of the year and look at numbers and dead money and cap money and who's getting what and who's back and who's not. And I really, you want these amazing wide receivers. Where is this coming from?
Good wide receivers. Again, you're making this a false choice. You're saying they have to have the absolute best, or there's plenty of middle ground here. The Ravens didn't have the best wide receivers in the NFL back in 2012. Anquan Boldin wasn't a top five wide receiver at that point in his career. Torrey Smith was a good number two wide receiver. Jacoby Jones was a perfectly fine number three wide receiver and Pro Bowl return specialist. That standard is not unreasonable. This is not that they have to have Davante Adams. The idea is that you're not throwing to James Prochet on fourth downs in a mid-December AFC North road game. That's what the standard here is. It's a very low bar, and it's amazing. This year they managed to not even clear that because they put all their eggs in the Rashad Bateman basket, and he got hurt. It was a suspect plan even if Rashad Bateman became Jerry Rice this year because you – what other position do they say, well, we can only have one, and if he gets hurt, well, then sorry, shrug. I mean, that's what I keep coming back to. And no, that doesn't mean that they have to have Davante Adams. There's a wide range here. They were at a point where I actually was feeling okay about their wide receiver group when they had Marquise Brown and they had Rashad Bateman.
I bet you were. They gave two number ones away. I mean, they were number one draft picks. You should feel good about that.
Well,
like,
but then they traded one and said, well,
that was their plan, dude. Their plan
and
was,
it was a lousy plan.
No, their plan was we can't sign a wide receiver. We need to draft them. And then this kid came in and wanted the ball. And they're like, all right, well, maybe we need a center. I mean, that's literally what they did. They weren't counting on the running back ripping his knee up either, by the way, right? I mean, we're now
– That was last year.
Two seasons into that. We're two seasons into the left tackle, you know, ripping his leg up, right? Right. So there have been a lot of things here that haven't gone to plan,
that's right? And,
right?
And having Bateman. And having the worst wide receiver group is unavoidable then, I guess.
Come on. Now you know.
That's what you're doing when you're saying that, oh, I think Lamar should throw 42 times. That's not, I mean, it's just, we're not getting anywhere. We've had the same argument how many different times. I mean, it just comes down to this. It's a lousy wide receiver group. It was a lousy plan at wide receiver. My issue was not
we're
trading
full
Marquise
agreement
Brown.
With that. Though we really are.
But I mean, it just comes down to, before we even start talking about the future of Lamar Jackson, doesn't the organization owe it to itself to see what this looks like with a new coordinator, what this looks like with a more concerted effort to bring in pass catching weapons?
Well, that's what they're going to do when they tag Lamar and bring in the next genius.
Well,
right?
Great.
Like,
and
that's probably where this is going to go, unless Lamar.
And that's what they should do.
If Lamar's combustible and is unhappy, then, dude, you don't think
who knows then, right? Oh, I'm not.
You don't think there's any chance in March that he has an agent that speaks out? Like, I don't know. I'm making this up, but that at some point he just says, "I want out. I want a different. I don't even want the next guy you're going to hire, and you're going to let Lamar pick your offensive coordinator." Is that? I mean, that's probably the way this is going to have to go if you're going to marry Lamar, right?
Well, I mean, that. Him picking it, no. Should he have some input? Sure. I thought Joe Flacco should have had more input at times before they hired Mark Trestman to replace Gary Kubiak, as one example. That doesn't mean the quarterback makes the call, but if you're in a position, as the Ravens were with Flacco then, as they, you know, whether it actually happens or not, still envisioning entering a long-term partnership with Lamar Jackson, then yeah, he should have input in that. But at the same time, I'm in full agreement with you in this, from the standpoint of, I need to see what this looks like with someone else running it, meaning someone else other than Greg Roman. I need to see what it looks like. Need to bring it, certainly bring in better pass catching weapons. Again, doesn't mean they have to have the best wide receiver. You know, they don't have to have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, but it'd be better to, it'd be nice to have something that's at least akin to what the Ravens had a decade ago at wide receiver, which again was not the best group in the league.
Were you of the mindset that Bateman was going to be any good?
I thought he was going to be good, but I was of the thought of, you're putting all your eggs into this basket of a guy who missed a chunk of his rookie year. And what's going to happen if he gets hurt? Yeah, again, you need to have.
Well, they really believed in Duvernay and Prochet. They really did. They put him on the roster, and you know, they still, I mean, Harbaugh still they gave him a pass. They shouldn't have ever let him pass the football. But they believed in these guys. They drafted these guys. They stand that they. That's generally the way this works in the league, right? You stay with the guy until you burn with the guy, right? Like, your potential is going to get me fired, as Coach Billick would always say.
I hear you to a point, but did the Ravens do that with, you know, it's not as though they didn't bring in edge rushers because, you know, they were confident in Jalen Ferguson, God rest his soul, the last couple of years, or Dalen Hayes last year. I mean, those.
Well, the reason Houston and JPP are here is because always been a, like, a, you know, always been like not so great, right?
We can talk about that at some point.
Well, that's when you bring in DeSean Jackson and DeMarcus Robinson.
But my point is, what other position do the Ravens do the Ravens operate where they're just not even going to give competition to a number three, a third round wide receiver like Duvernay, or a sixth round wide receiver like James Prochet, especially a sixth rounder? In what universe is a team going to say, well, oh, our sixth round pick needs to play, even though he's completely unproven? They don't operate that way at any other position. It's not as though they, you know, Matt Skura just, you know, was undrafted and just, oh, let's just put him in the starting lineup. It develops over time. A guy proves himself. James Prochet hasn't proven anything other than he can catch some passes in training camp. And, you know, even the preseason games, it's not as though he put up monster numbers. So
there's been a lot of that with Miles Boykin. I mean, this franchise has flashed these wide receivers to think maybe that guy will be a sufficient two at some point.
Trade for one. They traded for Roquan Smith. Why can't they go trade for a wide receiver? They traded for Anquan Boldin 12 years ago. So at some point in time, you have to recognize what's a weakness and how are we going to approach that. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean I don't think they should draft wide receivers. They absolutely should. But in the meantime, like, if their plan this offseason is they're just going to draft another wide receiver and hope that Rashad Bateman comes back healthy, then we're going to be talking about the same thing a year from now. I mean,
they are going to have to hope that Rashad Bateman gets healthy, right?
Oh, that's part of it. But they have to bring in a veteran. They have to bring in someone who can help them. It doesn't mean the guy's an all-pro, but it's got to be something better than they can't do this again for my mental health as much as anything.
And for our relationship, of course.
I'd be facetious to a degree. But, I mean, I guess, again, and this gets back to the point that I think we are on the same page on. I think I find it very difficult, you know, regardless of what happens, unless we see a miracle Joe Flacco-like postseason run from Lamar Jackson here, which, again, he's not throwing to Anquan Boldin, Torrey Smith, and Dennis Pitta and Jacoby Jones. So how feasible is that for Lamar, especially, you know, coming off of an injury? But assuming that scenario doesn't play out, I think you have to make a change of coordinator. And I think you've got to upgrade. You've got to find a way to upgrade your pass catching talent. Again, that doesn't mean they're going to be best in the league. Doesn't mean I want them to start throwing it 50 times, but we've got to see what this looks like, because before you're going to enter into a long-term contract, and look, Lamar Jackson might be fine with that, with that set of circumstances as well, and say, look, yeah, I want to see what this looks like, and I'll play on the tag because I'm not sure either. You know, he might privately be saying that to them too. And if that's the case, bring in a new coordinator, upgrade the talent at wide receiver, and let's see what this looks like. And to be clear, that doesn't mean you're not going to still be more of a run first team. And that's not, that's, of course, that's going to be a big part of what you do. But again, you have to be more efficient passing. It's not as though you just, you know, people who keep trying to diminish the passing game, it's not as though you look at your defense and say, well, we're going to be a great run defense. And well, our pass defense, we'll stop the run. Well, at some point in time, you have to be able to do both, right? Inevitably, teams, we've seen it. We've seen how this has played out. Teams that have been able to, you know, especially come January, neutralize, not shut down, but neutralize their running game. And then it becomes more of a, hey, can you make enough plays in the passing game? Buffalo did a great job of neutralizing their running game 2 years ago in January. And then we saw what it looked like. They lost and they only scored 3 points. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. And again, I mean, so much of what we're talking about, it's not going to pertain to what we see Saturday against Atlanta. I think we're going to see probably another slog, for lack of a better term, but I do expect them to win. You know, I think they can do the same thing to Pittsburgh as what they did in Pittsburgh a week ago. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out after that. But, you know, after these next two games, the competition, you know, they're going to be playing the big boys, starting with Cincinnati, and depending on their draw, maybe the wild card round will be you know, a little more manageable. If you are the wild card and you're going to Tennessee, or who knows, maybe Jacksonville with the way they're looking. Jaguars are looking good, by the way. But you know, Kansas City and Buffalo are looming, and Cincinnati is looming in week 18. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But you know, exhale, you and I. We've argued.
It's Christmas, man. I mean, I've got eggnog here in my cup, my Royal Farms, and I mean, I'm down.
And to be clear, I still think from a big picture standpoint, you and I are closer to being on the same page than it might sound for anyone listening to us and hearing us start to.
I feel like I'm going to be writing tombs about this in the offseason at columnists, because I think this is going to be an interesting offseason if they don't win the Super Bowl. Right now, they're not going to win the Super Bowl. It's always interesting, but it's more interesting than ever how far we are into this with Harbaugh and DaCosta and drafts and results and money and contract time and just the strangeness of the offense in general. I mean, they have zag when everybody else is zigged. It's been pretty good, but it hasn't been good enough. And what else will it take that it doesn't have that it needs other than good health? I mean, there's a whole part of this when the book's written and Harbaugh and DaCosta are on their farm, they'll look back at all this and say, everybody got hurt for two years. Everybody got hurt. We put all the money in the left tackle, unreliable. Maybe when he's there, he's great, but he's not. The quarterback, same thing. He runs in the linebackers. By week 12, he's beaten up. No wide receivers wanted to sign here. The offense coordinator tried to make everything really basic and vanilla because, like, we didn't have players that could function in that concept because we had third-string guys in there to begin with that didn't know where to line up. So, I think that there might be more of that story that's the real story than we weren't good enough, or Greg Roman stinks, or Lamar's no good, or they didn't have enough depth, or they didn't draft. I mean, it's all of that to me, but all of that plays out over the next 3 hours of football where, look, man, this is put up. This is why they play. It's Christmas week. They're 9-5. They're trying to get their quarterback healthy.
Yeah,
there should be no excuse as to why they can't go out on the field and compete with the Cincinnati Bengals, except right now they don't look good enough to do it.
Yeah,
the eyeball test says they don't look good enough to do it.
I mean, can they compete with them? Sure. Can they beat them? That's where I really have my doubts at this point in time. But just one final thought. You mentioned Greg Roman. For me, it's the chicken or the egg thing. You mentioned, well, they can't do more than what they've been doing scheme-wise because they lack the talent, or is it the other way around that, you know, bring in some better talent and see what this looks like. I think I agree. All of those things have played a part. It's never just one thing. Let's be very clear about that. But as things stand, as we're the week of Christmas, it's looking more and more difficult for me to envision Greg Roman being the offensive coordinator in 2023. I think you, at a minimum, you've got to bring in a fresh set of eyes and a fresh brain to kind of look at what they have. I mean, they've got a generational talent, a special talent at quarterback. See if someone else, I mean, if Greg Roman was going to take the Stanford job, you know, which he didn't get, then they were going to have to make that change anyway.
Dude,
I
you and
think
I could go point counterpoint all day, but Greg Roman would be a freaking genius if Ronnie Stanley played every snap the last 2 years, Hollywood Brown
maybe.
Didn't want to get out, that and if Dobbins didn't blow his knee out, and if Gus Edwards didn't blow his knee out, and down the line. I mean, just go down the line of what DeCostas tried to put on the field. And I'm not making excuses for him, because nobody sold me out quite the way Eric DeCosta has in recent days, as I sit with my face pressed to the glass and I can't go to games and ask questions anymore, and he pretends he's never met me before. That's fine, but I'm not here to defend DeCosta. But I would say, like, 2 years ago, he did not think for a moment in this system that Stanley would be hurt, that Hollywood Brown would want out as quickly as he did, that this was the complementary idea he had conceptually for how to make an offense work, that they were going to build this with old fart offensive linemen, which they've been trying to do for 3 or 4 years now, right? That's what they want, veteran, old fart, cheaper offensive linemen, not guys not named. Just go through the list. Jensen, go through all those guys, and they love Stanley, and that was their guy, right? But this Pat Ricard thing that they dreamed up and making him this power back to blow people up, and they didn't have a bad plan, dude. And when you lose Bateman and your other one opts out and your left tackle can't play half the time and your quarterback can't play after Thanksgiving, you get your ass kicked. I mean, like, if I'm really right, that's the column. You get your ass kicked when that happens, I think.
Yeah. But at the same time, where does it go perfectly? Like, what team has things go perfectly for them? Everything you said, I totally agree with for last year.
Patrick
That's
Mahomes played last week. Josh Allen played last week. Like, let's get,
of course.
Okay, so
no,
right?
And that's this judgment on Greg Roman is not based on the last 2 weeks. It's, you know, again, as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, look at Lamar's numbers since week four. I mean, his passing game's broken. It's broken. Period. It's broken. And we've seen it look decent for maybe a half here or a half there. You know, fourth, you know, late in the Jacksonville game and second half of the Tampa Bay game. But, you know, you have to be able to throw the football in the NFL. And that doesn't mean 45
times. I'll argue with you next year about this, okay? In the meantime.
Oh, we'll argue next week. But in the meantime, Merry Christmas to you. And hey, as much as anyone hearing this segment thinks we're making it sound like the Ravens are the worst team in the league, far
they're
from it. They're pretty good. I'm not sure they're better than pretty good. That's what's disappointing at this point. But hey, we'll watch it play out. I don't think Greg Roman's going to ultimately survive this, so to speak. He's probably going to get too much blame than the amount of blame
Correct.
He does deserve.
That's exact. Thank you. Make sure you
but
point that
you
out on his tombstone when he's out in Stanford getting paid.
But that's the way it always is, though.
Right.
I mean, that, you know, any coach, any Joe Flacco got kicked
Dude,
off the
Chad
boat
Steele
eventually.
Should be running to give me my press pass back after this segment, because I have sat here and defended DeCosta, Harbaugh, and Greg Roman.
I hear you. And like I said,
fire the trainers. Maybe that's Harbaugh then. I don't know. Dude, Merry Christmas. Okay.
Merry Christmas to you.
Eat some curumbieres, get some eggnog, enjoy being Uncle Luke and Deacon Jones, and just don't head slap anybody at the church. All right. Don't do what the other Deacon Jones did. By the way, I'm going through a lot of best of stuff here this week, and you may hear some of that or see some of that stuff out. There's just so much stuff I'll give you an example. Diamond Dallas Page, right? You and
Very
I sat
nice.
With him. Like, I found that the other day, like the stuff from the last 7 or 8 years since my wife's illness, and we changed our format back in 2014, I found a bunch of modern stuff, but there's still a bunch of older stuff that still needs to get up and be a part of what we're doing. So I'll be doing that next couple of weeks. All right, Deacon Jones?
Sounds good. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And we'll reconvene. I'm sure having something to complain about as it pertains to the Falcons. But I do expect a win on Saturday. I think it'll be a Merry Christmas for the Ravens, even if all their problems aren't going to go away magically on Saturday.
Look, man, it gives me a whole nother year to be wrong about everything next year. All right? So Luke Jones is here. He's Baltimore Luke. You can find him out in Owings Mills, or find him on the interwebs, or find him at his church with his family, hanging out, doing holiday things, hanging out with his beautiful niece and having a good time. We have great international visitors coming to us here as the man who saved my wife's life, Nielsen, and his wife, Franzi, are making their way over for the holidays. So we are going to be drinking some eggnog, eating some kielbasa and sauerkraut from Wise Markets. I'm picking up a ham. Did I? trying to see how many points I have because I always go to my Wise app. I've gotten so much better about using my Wise app, my Royal Farms app. I mean, I'm like a young man now, but I got to get the 400 points on my rewards to get the ham. I'm still stuck at 296. I got to go spend some money. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore, wishing you and yours happy holidays. And make sure you're with us at baltimorepositive.com.